you don't remember anything at all. I'm sleeping on my back.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. Cheers, my friend.
Cheers. Going old school.
We are going old school. Great to see you. This is podcast always, numero six.
Always a pleasure to see you, Alan, especially when we're podcasting.
So we are solo this evening.
We are. We're doing like the first podcast. You know, we were a little tied up last week as far as I had to take my son to college, and this week is Labor Day and the Jewish holidays, so I think lining up a guest has been... I don't know. We didn't really try, but...
No, I think we're... Listen, from my perspective, I'm looking forward to just chatting as we did. The motivation of Ski Slope was our monthly conversations, and here we sit.
Here we sit. Not to say, you know, hopefully next week we'll have a Swago guest on, or
well,
in the next
so,
2 weeks.
You know, on that front, a programming note, we are planning the podcast, the episode, the end of Swago. We've already started to address the date. We're discussing format. Is this going to just simply be a recounting? Is it going to be what is the word you guys keep using?
the radio drama.
Like what is that? I forget what the word he actually used. Like it's almost like a reenactment, so to speak.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I don't know if we'll.
I don't think we should.
That seems a bit bold, to be honest. Yes. I don't think we're going to be able to do a reenactment.
We'll have to do a couple of rehearsals. And then,
how many voices do you could pull off in this reenactment?
Just doing the sound effects,
right? Right. Oh, it was thundering that day.
I think we'll just do it in narrative.
I think we do. I think we just basically try and replicate what everybody loved about the initial Facebook, if you will, and that brought us all together in 1999, where everybody just loved hearing the story. Or hated hearing the story, might be. Well, enjoyed and learning it, I'm sure. Yeah, I don't mean hated. I mean just like it's infamous in a way, you know?
Right.
So, all right. But it was a great story. So that's coming up soon. We don't have a pin down date, but that's coming up soon. All the participants, a good many of obviously.
Haven't heard from Sheldon.
Sheldon's going to be in.
Haven't
but,
heard from him.
Although we did say we would like him on.
Do we invite him in?
I think we do send an invite.
All right.
Listen, we're going to be doing... Just explaining... He's in the industry, so to speak.
Right,
entertainment.
Right.
He'll understand.
I want to come on.
Well, Those odds are so slim that he would ever want to come on.
But you know
what?
It'll make me feel good knowing that we extended an invitation to him.
Exactly.
Like a respectful, polite invitation. Like
and we'll report that he declined our invitation.
We'll get a cease and desist letter from his attorney.
Yeah, right. If you speak about this again. So, it's exciting to be back.
And we'll give advance notice, like... Give a heads up as far as what the date is for that. And you probably won't be hearing it on the day we do it. It'll probably be like the next day.
Well, we are getting closer to that. So one of the key participants in the end of Swago needs to be Mark Holtzman. And Holtz is, I guess, out in Colorado. Mm-hmm. But I have some good news. We did a little bit of testing. And Juan and I are fairly confident that we can take call-ins.
We can.
Is it calls in or call-ins? Call-ins.
Calls.
Maybe just calls.
Just calls works. Yeah. You don't have to be confused about it. Yeah, but I think it would be call-ins.
There's a few like words like that where I don't know where you're supposed to put the...
I never do. I'm always confused
when
it's like the Utah Jazz. Like, is it... If you're referring to the Jazz, is it an is or an are?
I don't know. Those are always weird because I don't know if it's a group
or
an
Miami
individual.
Heat,
right.
Thing. It's always
right.
A little off, but I think it's an R.
Isn't it odd that the New Orleans Jazz moved to Utah and maintained Jazz as their nickname?
Like the least relevant name.
You
like
can't even
ironic.
Drink there. It's twisted that they would even keep it.
It's ridiculous.
Is absurd. So here we are the day before. Is it the day before Rosh Hashanah?
It is the day before Rosh Hashanah. Like Rosh Hashanah kicks in tomorrow at sundown.
And that's when you do your first Rosh Hashanah dinner.
That's the first dinner I'm hosting tomorrow.
You are. What does that mean? What does that mean for you? What does that mean for Mark?
That means my brother Lenny and his family, my sister Stacy and her family, my mother Ellen, will be, I think that's it, will be coming to my home tomorrow.
It's nice.
Yeah, no, it will be nice. It's always nice to get that together.
Does it have any meaning to you beyond the fact that all of those people will be coming to your house?
You know, it does. It does because it's a ritual, because it's an established ritual that, and like our canoe trip is an established ritual, and I feel like life gives meaning to things that are ritualized. So I would love to say, I think that yes, because you know it means so much to me as a Jew to be celebrating Rosh Hashanah with my family, But, you know, the honest truth is, you know, it's not. I mean, it's nice to have my family come together for the ritual of this, but it doesn't really hold, I think, the religious meaning that you know, I guess some Jews would think it should mean to me.
Well, I mean, I don't think
of it as the new year.
No,
I don't write the wrong year on checks once it's passed.
Yeah, for sure. You know, would you, like, so from my perspective, like, I definitely enjoy the fact that there are a handful of times throughout the year where you get these groups together, the people that mean something to you. Mm-hmm. But I would prefer that it wasn't religious-based. Like, the fact, and I'm not going to fight the fact that for whatever reason, everyone's into religion and coming together around these religious events, and that's fine. It doesn't negate the fact that everybody's coming together.
Right.
But I do find it, I would prefer, and I enjoy Thanksgiving more than I do. I prefer secular holidays. I don't prefer the religious holidays.
Right. But that too, it's all about, it's funny, there are these societal things, and it's going to be based on either.
Wait, is that right? Is it secular or non-secular? I always get that.
Secular is non-religious.
Okay, that's what how can they do that? Like, that's screwy.
That threw a lot of people off.
I still get fiction and non-fiction. I don't do it quick enough. I have to think once, you know.
I get epilogue and prologue wrong all the time.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Pro, I guess, I think of as before. Oh,
it is.
I
always think epilogue
pre,
is before,
pre.
And it's not. It's after, I think.
I see. I feel like both of them are before.
I know. I do, too.
Neither are after.
I know. And I would think with all the Quinn Martin production stuff that I watched in the 70s, like Streets of San Francisco, where he used those terms. Remember, he'd have like chapters to his show. You aren't into that, huh?
Who's Quinn Martin? I don't even know what you're talking
How
about.
Dare.
Who are you talking
he
about?
He produced a lot of like 1970s detective shows. Starsky and Hutch, Barnaby Jones.
Okay. I saw them. I didn't know that he was the producer.
Yeah, it's Quinn Martin production.
Who was the last one you were about to say? Cannon?
Cannon. That was the fat guy.
It was that fat guy.
Yeah, the fat ball guy. Yeah, but Quinn Martin always had this thing where he'd, like, the show would start, and it would be, like, the prologue or the epilogue, and it would be, like, the thing, and then the show would kick in with its opening segment,
right.
And then it would be, like, chapter one, chapter two, chapter three, and then it would end with the epilogue. We'd start with the prologue.
Yeah, epilogue's after.
Okay, I
guess. The prologue pre seems pro, but it should be pre. Why isn't it prelogue?
All very confusing.
It is. There's a lot of things in language that are confusing.
So anyway, on the celebratory stuff, like, I do feel like it's odd because all of our sort of gatherings are going to be based on either a religious holiday or a national holiday.
Right.
Or, you know, you may have like a wedding or a bar mitzvah within your sort of family group.
Right.
And that suffices to get everybody together. But
yeah, but those are also usually religiously based. Not that they're religious holidays, but it involves religion.
It underpins.
Usually.
Right. You're right about that.
It's all connected.
This
world that is supposedly is, you know, well, I guess government.
But you need that. I guess you need, even, you know, regardless of, and maybe this is the essence of it, like, regardless of whether it's religious or national, like, the fact that it is this ritual is, like, in and of itself, I think, a good thing. I mean, you know, assuming it's a celebratory, you're getting your family together.
Do you go to temple on Rosh Hashanah?
I you know what? I do. But, you know, temple to me is the most unspiritual thing, non-spiritual thing.
Really?
Like, I go there, and it's just... And I've tried, like, in the last, you know, like, for the last 5 or 6 years, you know, to a small extent, like, I sort of took
you've
the
tried
first...
to get involved in the spiritual side of it with your
well,
band
I did.
There, with the rabbi. And
well, I did.
Right.
I started, like, a salon.
Because I don't know what it means.
That's what they call it. Well, salon was, like, where people would gather to have, like, intellectual discussions. So,
oh, so it's like a forum.
Exactly.
Okay.
And, you know, I'd have guys...
Salon.
Very French intellectual. So we'd have guys come over and the rabbi came over too, and, you know, we would talk about stuff the rabbi would suggest, which it would have been better had he chosen sort of, I guess, more well-rounded topics for people that weren't necessarily into the intricacies of Judaism. But still, it was nice to have a forum.
So this was purely just a discussion thing?
Discussion group.
Right.
You know, we drink a little bit. It was similar to the podcast,
in
a way.
I'm
just
curious. Like, what does Rabbi Redhair drink? What was his name again?
Scotch. He was we all drank scotch.
What was his name again? He had an interesting name.
Aubrey Glazer.
Aubrey. Mm-hmm. Aubrey's a cool name.
Mm-hmm.
Aubrey Glazer.
Yeah, he's Canadian. I don't know if that has any connection to his...
his Aubreyism?
To his name.
No, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know any other Aubreys that are Jewish.
I don't know either.
So, okay, go on.
So there was that, and then I started every now and then the temple would have in on what they would call Fat Friday, these musicians come in and play. Like,
I remember you sending something out of that one.
And I was just like, we must have enough musicians within the community to get to be able to do this on our own. So I started that, and that's worked out well. But
so you continue to do that?
Yeah, I still do that, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what exactly is that? What does that mean?
We, you know, every, I would say, 4 times a year, we on a Friday night, like the JCC house band gets together and just plays like 8 or 9 songs at the Friday night service, which is nice because music, for the most part, you go to temple, like if you go to a bar mitzvah on a Saturday, you know, maybe there's some like a cappella singing from, you know, the rabbi, and then you try to follow and you don't even know the words, so you just try to make out the syllable. But other than that, like, music is so detached from the whole ceremony and, you know, of any sort of like religious sacrament. There's only so many things you can do to, like, I don't know, get your spirit and soul going, and music is one of them, and that's completely detached. And then they speak in a foreign language which you don't know, so you don't even understand what's going on for the most part. It's just, it just seems to me that we've sort of lost our way in terms of seems religion and spirituality have sort of diverged. You know what I mean? Like, it just, it's odd to me that the thing that's supposed to be the most spiritual, meaningful thing to me is the least.
Thing.
Like, I have to dress up in a suit and be comfortable and sit there and not, and for 2 hours fidget. And,
yeah, but why do you even go down that track? Like, that's, I refuse to go down that track. I don't believe in religion. Like, I don't believe in it. I believe, I mean, it just seems moronic to me. I'm sorry if I'm offending people, but I just don't understand how it almost implies, what, is one of the religions correct and the rest are wrong? Like, well, it makes no sense to me. That,
I agree.
And it's just like, why do we need this as human beings is what I question. Why do we need to try and answer the unanswerable via these, like, sort of phony community things that are built on some, really just a passed along story over the years? I mean, I think it's just the human weakness that we have to answer things that we can't answer. And I can accept that I can't answer most of the shit people want to answer. Do you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. And I agree with you. I think the answer is, for the most part, incomprehensible to us. You know,
we how arrogant of us to believe that we, as just the simply the current and most advanced evolution of, you know, just whatever living means and being means, right, believe that we could understand the meaning of all of this.
Well, we have sight and vision, man. That means, well, that's the same thing, and hearing and senses, so of course we understand everything. That's ridiculous.
Like, I am totally fine accepting I understand nothing.
Our perception of the electromagnetic spectrum, just that in and of itself, and what we can understand to be the electromagnetic spectrum based on machinery, is so small that to think that we can somehow perceive, make observations, and take measurements of what's truly going on out in the world is ridiculous. Like, there's just no way. Oh.
We'll be right back. Hey, I love that little riff we do there now in the interim that you created.
The bugle? The recall bugle. I was like, we should do a bugle. And I was like, which bugle should we do? And then it was like, recall. I'm like, that's what it is.
But it's kind of funny because it's like not really the one we had at camp. It has a little twist to it.
Yeah, it does. Well, I put that
beyond you putting on at the end, all right, that's enough.
Ours didn't end with Joe Jackson.
It didn't, no. So tell me what you mean by electromagnetic spectrum. Is that what you said?
Yeah, I mean the energy that's out there that can be that we can either perceive ourselves or we know that's out there. Like when you talk about ultraviolet light, like we can't see ultraviolet, but we have machinery that can gauge it.
Okay,
that can
measure
it.
So just every form of energy that's measurable.
That's measurable. And I think that too is rather limiting because it's still energy that we can measure through some
our forms of being able to measure.
Right, exactly, which it probably is magnitudes beyond.
So,
but even in that, even if you take that as sort of the universe of what's out there, what we can actually perceive is so small.
Right.
It's so ridiculous. I mean, visually and through hearing as well. So to think we can sort of have a grasp in terms of what is real out in the world, even, like, it's all just symbolic representations of energy that we somehow are able to sort of perceive the way we do because of how biologically we developed.
Okay, yet, I'm just sort of bringing this back to you go with your family to temple, yet you do that. Like, why do you, like, all right, maybe it's fair that, all right, I'm in a different position than you, and okay. I wonder how I would
answer
if I was still married and Burke was with me, and Burke is, if he believes what I believe, so he's like, you know, you gotta help me talk to mom about this. I'm
right,
like,
right.
I'm like, buddy, I'm like, buddy, you're on your own. You gotta convince your mother on that by yourself. But yet you still go. Like,
it goes back to ritual. It goes back to the fact that not so much my family, because when I was growing up, I didn't really go to temple for Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur. And that's really the only times we go to be quite honest. But Susan did. So for her, it's like this continuation of this ritual. And I think, getting back to the Judaism part of it too, like why I tried to sort of explore, you know, to see if Judaism, were, you know, the reading the Torah and stuff would resonate with me, was because I feel like I was born Jewish, and somehow or another, that in and of itself is a very sort of unique thing to be, and the fact that through the ages, the Jew people have tried.
You
to
want
sort of
to
get
know
rid of
your
Jews.
History. I mean,
exactly.
You can look at it
and
in that
like,
simple terms.
And it's like,
I get that.
And it's like, who am I to sort of say, ah, this means nothing to me? It's almost like, oh, I was born into this, you know. And I don't mean the term
should
exclusive
that?
Better, but
no.
This small club, exclusive club. And, well, I'm, it's...
Oh, you
it's,
really
it's,
look at it that way?
I don't look at it as though exclusive in the terms of like a hierarchy. I just look at it as like a very small group of people.
A narrow group
on this
of people.
Earth that have been here for 5,000 somewhat years as...
I don't even attach to that at all.
Even going
is that
to Brandeis,
even relevant?
Like,
is that even important?
See, this is, we've never talked. Like, you went to Brandeis, though. Like,
that was just a weird thing for a few reasons. Like, I guess my, you know, A, I wanted to play basketball.
Right.
B, I guess my sister was there and I felt more comfortable. I left high school early,
mm-hmm.
and I went there. There was no listen. This, it is interesting, I think, myself. Well, what the fuck are you doing going to, like, about one of the most Jewish schools?
Right.
But it was outside of Boston. It had a lot of other qualities. And you know what? I don't know any of my friends other than Morty.
Particularly religious.
Other than Morty, mm-hmm. you know, who's a cantor. But he wasn't before. Yeah, so I don't know anyone who's really religious. So it is a little strange, but I don't know if it's... I don't know if it's anything more than on the face value what it is. I just ended up going to that school. I don't know
I
if there's...
I guess at the end of the day, it's almost like... It's like an Apache relay analogy, almost. It's like, well, if my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was doing this, was going to temple, like, yeah, it's sort of nice that my son is doing it, too.
I see. So
even if it's all bullshit, it's sort of still nice that, like, wow, isn't it cool that humanity can carry on these traditions from generation to generation... If for nothing but the fact that it's carrying on a tradition, you know?
I get it.
And that's sort of where I'm at on it.
I
you know?
Get
Cause
it.
Because I try, you know, I took a couple of years where I was like, all right, I'll read the weekly Parsha and see what I get out of it. And, you know, I wish it didn't. I wish I was like, oh, man, this all makes sense to me now. It's great. But it didn't. You know, I'm sort of back where I was. And I'm just like, I don't know. It just seems a story. And I've asked people, like, I'm like,
right.
I have a guy, a friend of mine, a hedge fund manager, graduated Harvard in 3 years, and he's very religious. So I'm just like...
Very religious meaning what? What does that mean? Very
he's
religious.
Very, very Jewish. He's very much into Judaism and the rules.
Every Saturday he's at the temple?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rapping tefillin?
Yeah.
Ah, so that's all right.
So he's
good.
Yeah.
Very religious.
So he's very religious. Yeah. And I'm just like what experientially, like what has happened to you that like that convinced you that this was right? And it's and I've asked this of a lot of people, rabbis.
And what did he say to you?
Nothing. It's just like it just seems like
just it is what it is.
It's
and
a nice
it's a tradition.
Life, right? And it's about the ritualization, like Shabbat, which is you know the holiest thing in Judaism is to maintain Shabbat. Like it is. It's a great ritual. You know,
I've met some people in the last few years that do that, and I see that as a good thing. But to me, why can't I just say, oh, we have an every Friday night dinner? Like, I hate attaching it.
Because it doesn't get as ritualized if it doesn't have that association based on either religion or nationality.
Yeah, but that's only...
I know, I agree with
you. Yes,
that.
It can. Guess what?
Our podcast.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say to you. It has nothing to fucking do with religion. It has to do with you and I desiring to hang out and to...
And communicate.
Communicate and that to share.
Right.
Our communications with the people we know.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
No.
So that's, I mean, yeah. I guess, listen, I'm fine with the fact that Jill, my ex-wife, she goes to temple. She wants Burke to go to temple. I'm fine with it.
And is she religious or it's, again, it's the
her
ritual?
Family, I would push.
Did they do Friday night dinners?
They did, I think, like growing up. Mm-hmm. Are they religious? I think, a notch more than you were, mm-hmm. or people we know were, but no, not religious by any stretch of the imagination. You know, mm-hmm. not religious.
Right.
I don't know.
I think I know more religious people now than I knew when I was growing up. Like, I didn't know anybody that was kosher when I was growing up. Now, you know, I would... Like
now
25% of the people I know are kosher.
Really?
Yeah.
0% of the people I know, except for... Are you kosher?
No, I'm not kosher.
All right.
Well, I mean, I'm almost. I'm a vegetarian, but I'm not kosher.
No, that's completely different. And even if that was
no.
completely on par with kosherism,
no
I don't
even
care.
That makes no sense. Like, no, why are you kosher? Because it's a better way of slaughtering the animal, which is like slitting its throat as opposed to like pulling out...
What
know,
do you mean,
like,
even that? Like, see, I don't
like
see...
That, yeah.
That's just, to me, is just another one of a piece of the dogma of not... Like, the dogma of religion is ridiculous.
It is.
It's ridiculous.
Except that its essence. All of them sort of have this, you know, concept of good and evil. And I think that's enough. I think so long as we can buy into the concept of good and evil, like to do good is
And you need religion to buy into good and evil? I don't need religion
in
to
terms
buy
of
into
our,
good and evil.
You know, evolution as human beings... You know, maybe we still do. Maybe
I,
we're sort
I
of at this sort of segue cli- now where we don't.
Clearly, need, we still do.
We do.
Clearly, yeah. This society needs it.
Right.
Because I am not the norm.
Mm-hmm.
My beliefs, my willingness to suspend any belief. I don't want to do it. Like, I just do not do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm surprised that more people don't. And I view it for many people as just.
Well, the irony
it's
of this,
like therapy to some extent. It's
the
what
irony
keeps them,
of this
like, calm.
Is that I find, like the Jewish people I know that are, you know, for lack of a better term, bright, smart.
Mm-hmm.
They're all that way. They're all sort of, well, not all, because I just mentioned the guy who's very religious, but they're all sort of questioning of like, what is this? This is ridiculous, and always have been. I mean, you and I talked about this stuff, you know,
forever.
Back on the original ski school.
You know, you
I'm
and
sure.
I, you right, you and I used to be exactly on the same page. And I was actually surprised if when we started hanging out, like, you know, way more regularly,
mm-hmm.
I thought you were like, you were, I guess I saw you posting about these groups you were doing, and I thought you were much more bought into religion than I learned you weren't. But I think you were for a little bit, though. I feel
it
like you really tried it hard.
I had read something where it was like, or maybe somebody had told me that with respect to Judaism, like, you have to make the first step. Like, you know, it's not just about what it can offer you, but you have to make the first
God
step.
God almighty.
Dude, I jumped, I leaped, I was, I did it all, but like...
Sounds like what they probably say at Scientology, too.
No, and
it sounds like what they probably say at fucking Jim Jones down in
But I'm glad, because now I'll never look back and be like, oh, you know what, maybe if I did read the Torah, maybe that would, like it didn't. I read it and I was just like, I don't get this, especially as sections where they're just counting things and you're just like, really? You're going to tell me like what the hidden meaning of all this is, and there's something, and maybe there is, but like I don't buy into it.
And still
nobody has pointed to me, and I've asked, mm-hmm. like, show me why this is real, show me this is true, or not even show me but explain to me why, what happened to you, like explain to me the event where you were like, it clicked for you, and you were like, my God, this is right.
Because it only clicks once you've adapted, accepted a blind faith.
It only clicks
once you've done that.
But there, don't you think, though, and I'm sure we'll agree on this, that there has to be, I'm not saying like God has to come down from the sky and speak to you and say, hey, this is... But there has to be some experiential quality to it. It can't just be, this is what Moses did and it's true, so believe us. Like, there has to be something that I experience that I never have with respect
Here
to Judaism.
Here's what
I
believe.
And I have in other contexts,
yeah.
but not Judaism.
I believe ultimately, and for whatever limited value this has, that energy is at the root of every single thing that exists in everything we know.
No question.
And that's it. Like, I hate to say it, but that's so stopping short.
Well, that,
but that's it. And also, like, the sun beams in the energy, and it's something about all that. But
Well, that gets back to what I was saying. Like it is all energy, and we think we have this concept. Like, well, it is, but this is solid, and
no,
water
it's
is
not
liquid.
Solid.
And
the solid thing you punch is made up of energy.
That's our biological, you know, evolutionary way of perceiving it, which doesn't necessarily mean that that's what it is. It's just our way of perceiving it. So at the end of the day, yes, it's all.
It's kind of interesting. Like whatever all this is that we figured out how to make these fucking microphones so that we can make podcasts to go broadcast to people.
I have a theory about that.
I think
our sort of like our ability to sort of technologically evolve, like I think it gets created as we sort of dream up these ideas, like solutions come to us
because
almost magically, you know, because we're able to conceive of something like that, so it actually does. Sort of
you think like it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecies to some extent?
Yeah, I do.
That where oh that's interesting. Listen, I don't fight any concepts like that because I'm willing to accept. That anything that involves the movement of energy is an acceptable answer to everything.
Right.
Has as much validity as anything else anybody could throw at me. And I hear these weird explanations, you know, that you might hear from these people that look a little off the wall and whatever. But I'm like, you know what? When it's energy based, I'm willing to acknowledge it and give it a moment of thought more than anything else.
Right, because at the end of the day, that's what it is, you know? And then to think that, like, well, certain things don't exist because, you know, because that particular energy that exists, we can't see it or hear it or smell it.
Because logic doesn't allow you to accept
it. Like, it's like doesn't radio waves in and of itself dispel that whole thing? You know, the fact that, like, if somebody from 500 years ago came here now and, like, you know, all of a sudden you were playing the music off your phone or watching television, it'd be like, how does this even happen?
Right.
And we don't even know how it happens, but it's, you know, but we have a concept that, well, the energy travels through the wire and
passes the signal.
And for us, that sort of makes sense. It's like, okay.
It makes sense, but who the fuck really understands how that picture comes in on your TV? I don't even understand how these people are hearing us.
I
like that this microphone takes in my waves, turns it into like binary things, I guess, and then spits the same binary things out and it replays it, I guess, on
like
the other side.
If you were the last guy to live on Earth, like, that's it, everyone else died, but you live on Earth and you live for a million years.
You never create
that
shit.
Figure that shit out? Like, there's no way, man.
No, well, that's an interesting point in and of itself, but it is collaborative on a lot of levels.
Because,
right?
Yeah, it's because it's groupthink. It's
right.
Group,
you can't do it without the collaboration.
Yeah. I mean, we're
pretty crazy.
It is. I mean, you know, we're one organism, really. I mean, we think we're separate human beings and individuals, and we are, but we're also an organism that collectively thinks things through. And
so, to that point, you're like, so when I think about like the evolution of life, then like, so my grandfather died, yet he still lives in me. Your father, you know, I know your father isn't. I almost look at it like a river. Okay,
it's a good.
We
analogy.
Flow forward, yet. The water still evaporates and some pieces of it re-come back in. And the people in our lives are there. They're in you. Their energy lives in you. They live on. Do I not? I remember my grandmother, my grandfather intimately. Their energy still exists.
Right. Even at its most, like, even if you don't believe in an afterlife and in spirits and all
and I don't.
Right. At its most reductionist sort of perspective, yes. Like your memories of people, your sort of interactions with other people based on
that's
that person.
That's the collective, collaborative thing.
Exactly.
It all organically goes on.
Exactly. I mean, so they, you know, they still exist. Their actions still exist. Even if I just read this book. It was almost depressing because, and I forget the name of the guy. It's actually an Indiana University professor. But he basically makes the case that, like, our consciousness is just an illusion. That it's essentially this sort of way of just understanding the world and it's all reflective. But the sense of I is really artificial, that it's just a brain that's sort of perceiving patterns and that's all it is. And he sort of says, you know, that's why you don't really have memories from when you're like two or three, because you haven't really established that I-ness yet, you know, that sort of sense of like I'm separate from this and this is me perceiving it and that's that out there.
It seems that like that you and I can agree on certain things that occur though in a common way. That almost eliminates that a little, doesn't it? Doesn't it fight that? Like if we have a common belief about how things happen.
I don't think it eliminates. I think it's just. I think it takes away the sort of I don't know. I won't say fantasy, but the notion of like a soul that lives on after the body passes. You know, that it's basically all biological, electrochemical.
So, speaking to that,
so
you know,
there's nothing. You know,
we both like Joe Rogan.
Yes.
And he did on his sci-fi show, he met with Ray Kurzweil, who's one of the couple of people who's, you know, like this genius thinker that is Google's chief thinker, whatever
chief
that means.
Intelligence officer.
Yeah.
I think is his title.
And what they're predicting, and it's interesting, is that's just that by the year 2045, well, there's a movement around this.
I'm into this.
Yeah. That effectively we're going to be able to download our consciousness and re-upload it elsewhere. Now, all right, Ray Kurzweil wasn't going that far. Ray Kurzweil, I think, was saying more to the effect that we're going to morph into not only humans, but humans with different parts, with software. Software is going to become a part of us.
Yeah, but Kurzweil's thing, regardless of it, you know, the way you see it, of uploading consciousness or getting artificial parts, is that it is this sort of coming together, the singularity, and that
I understand, but for some reason,
mortality. I mean, he's popping vitamins like a madman, so he makes it to 2045.
Right, and it's really very interesting. And you just think about a lot. Just think about some of the basic advancements in hip surgeries, in stents, and you know, just things that keep have a long. We clearly are figuring out how long it life, but they're going beyond that and almost treating it as a software solution. And that's, it's pretty fucking amazing.
It is amazing, but I feel like with artificial intelligence and this concept of even downloading our consciousness to a machine, like we don't even have, like, we're not even at first base yet.
You see, I don't believe that one's, okay.
But
I'm more about the
do,
Ray Kurzweil going, you're going to be half bionic man, half human being.
All right. You're not
the downloading your whole consciousness and then re-uploading it in other places, that's... it just purely may be because intellectually it's
It'll
so difficult to understand.
Because we can conceive it. This goes back to the thing where I said it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because we
because
can
it's close
conceive
enough.
Of doing it,
really,
it'll
do you
happen.
Think... So, well, if you believe that, then you clearly believe we'll be able to do, like, from Star Trek and port you to from here to 20 miles away without a problem.
Although the negative to that is, like... I sometimes think about this, like if it was like 19, if it was 30 years ago, it's 1983, and I'm looking now at 2013. Like, is 2013
as
cool as I thought it would be, or not quite as cool as I thought?
Well, you didn't even know about the internet when you were looking at it.
No, probably not, but would I have, you know, and I don't remember conjecturing would the internet exist or anything like that, so I don't know. I mean, you know, it's hard to have a perspective on it.
Well, because you can't know all the things you didn't know.
But it still seems like the same world. You know, it still seems like the same world.
Well, I think that's always the case.
Mm-hmm.
That's never not the case. I don't believe that anyone who's had the common experience over of living over a 30, 40, 50-year span, even if it accelerates, even if you jump ahead several hundred years and what we called happening in 50 years happens in 30 days,
right.
It's still going to feel common to those people because it's the common experience.
It's like New York City has always looked like New York City. Like, it's never looked like futuristic New York City to me.
That's
you know?
True.
You know, it's like, and I'm always expecting it's going to be futuristic. Although, if I go to Hong Kong, then Hong Kong looks like futuristic New York City. So that's.
But in Hong Kong, it always looked like futuristic New
true.
York City because
so,
there's always glass, whatever.
True.
It's
that's
just
true.
If you're immersed in it, it's the, you know.
You know, yeah. It's like
you don't notice.
Grow. You don't notice.
Yeah, exactly.
And to me, it was like GPS to me is sort of like the one thing I would have never
GPS.
Anticipated. Yeah, like that. I can go in my car and I can drive and it can tell me the directions.
Map
of
shit out.
Yeah,
go everywhere.
I was like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, that would be the one thing.
It would be interesting if it would be interesting if you could just like regain that consciousness at that moment
and
think
back.
About and say you'll be able to do this in the future and see what the reaction would be.
Mm-hmm. Right, if you'd be like, oh, that's
really?
Amazing.
Come on, imagine
like,
if they
it?
Said that to you, like you could do all this shit. You'd be like, really? We're going to be able to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess
if someone could tell you right now what we're going to be able to do 20 years from now,
okay,
you'd be excited about all of the advances we're going to be able to do.
But once I experience them, would I then be
no,
that excited?
Because you're
going to
incrementally adopt these things with little bumps along the way. You know,
right.
Certain things you sort of upgrade to.
So if you took 1983 me and plopped me into 2013.
1983, let's go back. Where were we at Swago?
We were counselors, actually.
Fine. So,
Well, now we're sophomores in college. We're just starting our sophomore year in college.
I don't know anything about the internet at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Cell phones are probably big, huge fucking things that sit in your car.
I would
car.
Think the internet's cool, but it wouldn't be anything that would like blow my mind. It'd be like, oh, that's cool that you can like have an encyclopedia and television on your computer.
So even with the so you would feel that what it's actually become.
Yeah, the internet wouldn't shock me. I don't think. I think I'd be like, all right, that makes sense.
Absolutely. First of all, they were talking about wiring. Computers are already happening. Mm-hmm. The idea of if you said to me they're going to create a network for a computer to speak to a computer, yeah, of course, yeah, that's not crazy. Right. Yeah, like that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And frankly, I think it was coming about even in the 80s when we were there. Right. I don't think it was so...
Well,
it was at the nascent stages within the, you know, the universe.
What was that Matthew Broderick movie? That was a little bit later than that, where he sort of like into the defense
with Robert Redford?
Was it Robert Redford?
I felt like Robert Redford was in like a sneakers or something.
Like he like hacks into like the defense department, like
something like that,
system,
something like that,
and sets off nuclear war against the Soviets.
I don't know. I feel like Robert Redford was in a movie like that.
He may have been. But yeah, like the whole hacking thing was coming of age at that point. So obviously the internet was sort of on the horizon at the very least.
So let me ask you something. So did you feel you were in a religious place at Swago? At Camp Swago?
Never. Not even during the Friday services.
No, me neither. I thought it was just an episode. Like just a...
It was. I felt like it was something. It was that.
It was a
show, that was a ritual. That
level,
was a ritual.
Ritual,
it was,
yeah,
like, all right. It was like a the shortest ritual ever. Because literally, how much time was contributed to that? A minute and a half at most.
Well, between the chair moving, that took about 5 or 10 minutes. But it was a minute and a half.
That was it. I mean, other camps, I don't know. I mean, the Wayne County camps, do they have the Friday night services? Like where it's
I
a
think
full
it
blown thing.
The, there are certain camps that are far more religious. Like Poppin was talking about going
right
to Kinderen.
Kinderen, yeah.
Yeah, that one I'm sure had a more mm-hmm substantial service.
Camp Ranger.
Some even had Saturday morning things. A few, like it wasn't.
I think I remember Camp Ranger, which I went to when I was 7 in 72. I think they had either a Friday night service or a Saturday morning service.
Right.
One of the two. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, that's religious. You know, you're going to a religious service. But Swago was not
religious whatsoever.
I mean,
even though it was like 99% or maybe even sometimes 100% Jewish campers.
True.
Right.
But I don't remember discussing...
I never talked about religion with all of you.
Well, we talk about religion in the sense that we're talking about it now in terms of questioning it all and being like, this is ridiculous. Why does the world need this in a way? This sort of groupthink, like religion should be what you
should
think.
Should be independent.
Right. How can it
should
not
be? Your
be?
Own, it should be just your own personal
like how can you sort
feelings
of voluntarily agree to believe something? You either believe it or you don't.
I agree.
You know, and it's to sort of say, like, well, my parents are this, and I was raised
right
this
you
way,
know,
so
if you really
believe,
think about
it's like, well, really? Like,
who really wants to be told that many things to believe?
No, I know.
That's absurd.
It's ridiculous.
When you think about it in those terms, it's like, you know, here are the 20 major religions, whatever the number is, four mm-hmm or five major, whatever. These are the things you have to choose from for what to believe about everything here.
Yeah,
fuck
like,
you.
Yeah, like, what part of Judaism?
Why can't I choose my own thing?
I know, and isn't it like, and choose your own thing to believe. I mean, the word itself, believe, it seems like an involuntary thing. Like, you can't voluntarily believe something
exactly
or not believe something. You either
exactly
believe it or you don't. It's not up to you.
Exactly.
So it's like, you can be taught as much as possible, but at the end of the day, if you don't believe it, you don't believe it. And that's, you know, that's unfortunately where I'm at. And I think to sort of just accept belief as a given is...
It's the worst thing.
It's the
of
worst
all
thing. It's like it's defeating your humanism.
Exactly. It's like giving up the one thing you need to be holding on to is your own personal beliefs and opinions and trusting them and not letting others tell you what to do. You have to have that own self confidence in your own,
particularly because
your own ideas.
Because history has shown how humans can be led astray, you know, how that... You
and
know,
not that long ago.
Not that long
and
ago at all.
Relevant to the Jews,
right,
the Holocaust.
Right.
I mean, you know, there's no fighting that. That's such a crazy reality that took place.
So crazy.
But that's not about...
That too.
That's another
that lays,
reason
that
why
lays
religion
the Judaism
is ridiculous,
thing,
though. No, it makes it even crazier for me.
Yeah, but it almost makes it like... Because that's the
like,
latest in the history of Jews being persecuted and wanting to be destroyed. So, anyway...
We'll
on that
be right,
happy note.
We'll be right back.
All right.
All right, that's enough.
Are we back?
Live and in living color.
So we ended on the Holocaust there, huh?
Yes.
Which
yes
we followed up with a bugle call on Joe
yes
Jackson.
Yes, please. Don't take it as a desecration. So, anyway. We just ate some... One
the cheapest
Mexican
shit Mexican food in the city is the best Mexican food in the city.
And it's prepared by Chinese guys, which I love. You know, because they've mastered the art of, like, preparing food fast and getting it to you fast. And
the holes in the wall. They don't even have fucking seats.
Well, let's I ate one like 2 weeks ago. It was like the worst. It was
ate one what?
In like a fresco tortilla. Like downtown.
That's what we just ate.
I know, but they're all over the place. So I ate one.
Yeah, they're like, Chinese people, which is the funniest
thing,
right? Exactly.
Chinese making Mexican food. Only Manhattan.
Only, listen.
It's like a burrito? A burrito's like $3.
Whatever I ordered there, which was a lot, was $12.99.
You know, and it works. I mean, it's good stuff, you know. You can't really mess up beans.
They do those quesadillas solid.
Listen, it's a quesadilla. You throw cheese on the tea. It's not like you don't have to be an expert chef. There's no training.
We don't need Adam Perry Lang to know how to cook a quesadilla.
No. If you want to roast a pig,
you call Adam.
I can't even try his shit, man. Like, I'm sure it's good.
You know, he owns like Daisy Mays. So Adam Perry Lang, Adam Perry back in the camp days, is a chef of major renown.
And we
noticed he was on either Adam Carolla or the Jay Moore podcast, and we may ask one day, you know. So I know he's an owner in Daisy Mae's Barbecue up on 46th and 11th.
I caught him on Iron Chef one day.
He's on.
Before I even knew, he's super legit. I knew he was like a renowned chef, because I'm not really in on who renowned chefs are.
Yeah, I'm not really either,
but
except if they
late went night, I'm watching Food Channel, and it's Iron Chef, and it's Adam Perry Lang against Bobby Flay. Bobby Flay. And Bobby Flay always struck me as sort of a Tyler Hill, or right?
I've actually met Bobby Flay a couple of times, and I see what you're saying.
All right. That's all. And then it was Adam Perry Lang, and I'm like, well, I know Adam Perry. I don't know Adam Perry Lang.
I don't know. You know, if we have mom, we'll understand. I guess I can understand among any Mormon young ones.
Exactly.
About where that occurred. I get it. So it's not even really all that important. But
no, it's not. But I wasn't sure if it was the same guy. If it was just Adam Perry, I'd be like, oh,
then. And then I mentioned in one of the back and forths on Facebook with Johnny Lieberbaum that Jesse Harris was, I don't know, did we mention that on a podcast yet?
We did,
and then we have Russell Gewirtz.
Screenwriter,
great movie, Inside Man. We have some people.
And Eric Friedman runs Skadden Arps.
He's
the managing partner at Skadden Arps, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. How crazy is that? Like,
this is fantastic. Successful people who went to Camp Swago.
Exactly.
So we were talking about the Holocaust, and I'm going to segue over to something. What do you think? Let's talk about Syria right now. Like, I'm just curious. Like, do you think we should do anything? Like, what do you think we should be doing right now?
I don't know. I'd like to hear more of the evidence or the proof.
So let's just go on the assumption that Assad actually did gas these people. Okay. Just take that as an assumption. What should we do?
I still don't know. I'm sort of at a loss.
Like, I feel like you do need to do something that's punitive, but if it doesn't end up being punitive, is it worth doing?
But I feel like in that situation, it should be the international community doing something as opposed to the United States.
I'm torn. I'm really torn.
I'm torn
on this
too.
One.
I'm torn too, because there's no good choice. I mean, in a way, it's like
it seems to open the door for carte blanche to do these sorts of things. If the U.S. is not going to respond now,
I think there's a realistic degree to this kind of thing, in terms of listen, are we the policeman for the world? Like, anytime anybody does this,
I don't really want to be the policeman for the world.
Well, hear me out. So is that what we are? And if so, okay, I get it. Like, we should be. We're the number, you know, we're the most powerful country on earth. You know, and it's this idealistic concept of what mankind should be. You know, we were talking about before this. Forget religion, that good versus evil, and let's try to promote good as much as possible. And okay, that's great, but I don't know if it's possible. I mean, idealistically, that's the greatest thing in the world to be, if it's possible. But I don't know if it is possible.
Well, it's possible is it not? Do you not go for the greatest degree of that you can?
I don't know. I mean, it seems to me like Rwanda. Like, we could have intervened there and maybe done something. Not that I really know. I'm not a military logistics expert by any means, but it seems like that kind of situation is just sort of, all right, genocide, what are we going to, you know, what are we supposed to do? But we could have, I guess, done something there.
I don't really know either.
And is it better to be sort of massacred by sword than by chemical weapons? You know, I don't know. It's I don't know where you draw the line. And on the other hand, it's hard to turn a blind eye if you have the power.
Emotionally. it's difficult to just not do anything, but intellectually, I don't fucking think we should do anything. We should let the fucking people figure their own shit out around the world, unless it truly becomes something that would become a threat to our own security and our own
right.
self-interest.
It's sort of the Star Trek sort of approach where, if you remember, they would go to other planets, and their mm-hmm. whole creed was like, we don't interfere.
Right.
You know what?
Right.
We don't even want them to know about us. We're just. But if it becomes a threat to the Federation,
right.
Well,
all right.
We'll react.
I'm down with the Federation.
All right. So that's sort of the 23rd century view, and I guess. But then the other side of me is like, but we have this ability. We in a way, there's this very idealistic concept of the United States, what we're founded on. You know, the fact that there was no monarch. You know, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution. These lofty ideals. And it's like, and the shit worked out. It's like we were founded on this, and then 250 years later, and for the last 100 years, we've been the most powerful country on the earth, which says more about those ideals, I think, than it does about us as a people per se, because we're not really a people. We're just a collection of people that came from other places. So it's really about the ideals. So there's part of me that says, well, if you apply those ideals on a grander scale and say, well, we want these ideals to be spread throughout the world,
right.
and we're going to take it upon ourselves to do that, it's a different deal.
I don't even believe in the vast majority of the cases, I don't believe we can do it. Even if we want to do it, it's not possible to do it. There are forces bigger than our will to do
it. Right, and as good as your technological power is, like, at the end of the day, it has to get dirty, and it's about killing people if you want them to sort of succumb to what you want, and how far are you going to take
that? I actually heard Rand Paul go off on this thing, and this is the one thing where it's hard to argue. For me, not the one thing, I'm sure there's other things too, but this is something that I kind of believe, I agree with him. But emotionally, I feel like when something so horrendous takes place, like, oh, don't you have to do something? If you can, don't you have to try and let the world know that's not okay? But I also feel like I don't know if it's worth doing. Like, it just doesn't. It's not going to yield anything.
There's no good decision. There's no bad decision. It's tough. Either you're an idealist or a realist, I think, to an extent.
I believe. Can't you be both? I mean, you can't be both, but we're all challenged by both.
If Congress and the president now turned to you and said, "Okay, Alan, you're the guy.
What would I do?
We'll give you all the information. You make the decision. Like, would you be comfortable doing that?"
I'd make the move that Obama's going to make. I would just do something just to let you know that we're doing something to throw a few fucking bombs your way, but I know it's meaningless and I don't know what else I can do. And then I would try and engage the rest of the world. There's only, through some diplomatic effort to try and come to a resolution. But I just feel like to not do anything just feels wrong for some particular reason to me. After I just said it to you, I'm fine if we don't do anything.
Yeah, it's hard. Because we have this thing about chemical weapons, and granted, they must be horrible. I mean, if you were sort of had sarin and you breathed it in, it's got to be a horrible way to die. But it just seems odd that we've sort of elevated chemical weapons to this, qualitatively different level.
Well,
being gunned down or massacred with swords is like, well, that's okay.
I think that you can, because the kind of mass killings that you can do, weapons of mass destruction with a chemical weapon, that you have to restrict it. You could literally, if you don't restrict it, you could wipe out just huge regions and numbers of people in like just one fell swoop.
I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole premise behind it. Let's get off of war. Let's move on to a good subject. Let's take one more negative subject. Not negative, that's the start on the wrong fucking foot with this. So, Robert Krause got our response to Robert's appearance, which we loved. It got misunderstood, I think, at the end of the day. And I just want to personally say I have nothing but love for Robert. I think you feel the same way. I think you had some issue with how he presented his point of view. And I know you guys talked. I just want to make sure the world knows that I have nothing but love for Robert.
I hear you. I know it's true. And yeah, the whole situation was weird.
By the way, the world is 397 people right now.
It's a closing world. But clearly he, when I spoke to him I guess, a week ago last Thursday. And he was so sincere in that he only meant good by what he was saying. Right. And I was just like, oh, you know what?
So even if the word was wrong, it doesn't really matter. If his heart was right.
And it's funny, and I've always, through life, I've always tried to sort of, I have this concept where it's like, you know, always choose love. You know, always sort of go on the good side and you know, presume the better. And if you get disappointed, you get disappointed. But, you know, it's still better to sort of...
Yeah, exactly. Why not err on the side of love?
Right. And it's like, and during the podcast, I was that way. And then when I heard it back, I was like, no. Objectively, it just seems like he's sort of calling me out. And I was wrong. You know, and so it's sort of, it's almost like it's a bad thing to
happen. Lesson learned.
But it's like, no, you know, I should stick to my guns and still always presume.
Exactly.
Good, you know?
Exactly. And so peace and love to Robert Kraus.
Absolutely.
Yeah, awesome. You know, I want to talk about something else. I'm curious on your perspective. So I think I'm sure I've mentioned to you, but like I feel like Jeff Bezos is one of the most, just the most brilliant guys out there. Like probably the most brilliant guy out there, even more than the Google guys, who are obviously
I think
brilliant.
I think so too, but I think in terms of it being an objective truth, I think time will tell. You know, because he seems he's about just in business, a sense. He seems he's more about cash flow than he is about profit.
Well, I don't know about cash flow, but growth. I mean, he's clearly after a bigger vision.
Right. Well,
but I want to talk about beyond Amazon because I don't want to. He bought the Washington Post. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if he can actually. I think it's symbolic that. It's not. It shouldn't be called the newspaper industry. Like, I'm getting off subject here, but...
Yeah, leave the word paper out of it.
It has nothing to do with newspapers. Like, what it is the in journalism industry, like the in reporting industry. And I think the only thing that has value, and I wonder, here's what I wonder, if he can figure out how to put the proper value on true journalism... investigative reporting, because that's all it really is. Mm-hmm. And now, at the end of the day, just putting out the basic data about what happened today, without any point of view, is the AP UPI that's commoditized now. Mm-hmm. And I'm very excited. He said today that his only purpose was, or in the last couple of days, he said it to just give them money to ramp so they don't have to worry, and to provide a point of view, like just to share his point of view on things. He's staying away, whatever they could figure out.
That's scary. I mean, you know, when it's all about, like, I want my point of view to come across, which I can understand.
Well,
buying
they all, every
newspaper,
owner of a newspaper is.
I can, like, right. Well, that, then, you know, but that's, you know, I understand it from an owner perspective, but from a consumer perspective, that's, you know, concerning.
So I think the question ultimately becomes, just beyond that, is can he create a, can he productize journalism? And turn it into an e-commerce? Can he make it a saleable product on some level? And I think it's going to be exciting to see how content, because that's all that's left.
But content,
the idea
content
of
content is information, right? So
it's point of view. Like I feel like it's
is it?
Well, there's two that's editorialized, but information. That for me, somebody has to get to the source of it, has to do the real work to get the information, to get the real information. Mm-hmm. And that has a huge value. But it's become really commoditized at this point.
Well, I think in terms of politics, which is, I think, why I would want to own the Washington Post as compared to the New York Times, is I think politics is the one place where, I'll backstab, everything else in the world would. Whatever events, if it's a fire or a flood or a hurricane, I don't think newspapers matter. I think you can have people on their Twitter feeds,
exactly,
and on their phones.
Exactly.
So here's the flood.
That's exactly what I'm saying. AP and UPI stuff.
But politics is such a thing where you want to sort of go off the record, and you know you're not going to put on Twitter what you maybe believe. You know, politics obviously
what
play
about,
a role in politics.
Yeah, but what about investigation and what about uncovering? Uncovering the wide variety of things that one could find across the world on every single subject matter.
I think.
What about global warming? Things of that. Whether it is or isn't anything. I'm not even going to get into. I don't even want to get into that with you.
Well, you and I have talked about that. Like, why is there not like a television show called Debate? And they just have the foremost
experts. It's called the Ski
and
Slope, and we invite the guests onto the show.
That should
show.
Be our goal. Like within the next year, we're going to have
let's
like,
get
some
real
global
guests.
Warming. Like intelligentsia on here and debate the issue.
You know, I have such trouble. It's easy to say global warming has to be happening. It's easy to say that, is it not? It's easy. There's so much information that's being thrown at us to say that. However,
it seems that's the view that is promoted.
However, I have a lot of difficulty believing a lot of the shit that's thrown at us.
I don't believe
shit.
I'll just break it down for you right now. And I fucking recycle. Break down my cardboard. I'm good that way. I don't eat meat, but I don't believe shit about the global warming stuff.
Okay.
Well,
I have trouble. One day, aspartame is fine for you. The next day, it's not. I just don't trust our science at the level many people do. So far, you know, I think we joked, as Dennis Miller once said, it's like, yeah, come on. Like, these people who are telling you this are the same people that, you know, used an outhouse back in 1902 and couldn't really tell what the temperature really was, probably. And
like, how big is our fucking sample size of what the weather was that would make us feel like, well, you know, it's got to be, your sample size has to be huge.
However,
so you can see sort of the accelerations and decelerations.
I'm not going to debate that the environment continues to evolve and change. It obviously does. Right,
here's my point, and I'll let you finish it.
But I don't know where it comes from, and I'm not going to trust their point of view on where it comes from.
That it's based on mankind. Like even if the weather was changing, how do you establish the causation effect? Like, even if you've proven the effect that, yes, the Earth is getting warmer.
There are so many other variables occurring that I don't know if you can say with absolute certainty. However,
it seems impossible however, to me that you could establish
intellectually,
that.
It's easy to understand that throwing disgusting smoke filled with crap into the air is not good. That can't be good for us. I don't know what the end effect is.
It can't be good, but does it heat? Does it cool? I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm not saying that. So,
yeah, it's no good.
Taking those...
And it's better than it was 40 years ago.
Taking precautions to not have that occur, I think, is a good thing.
To what end? To where you eliminate fossil fuels completely?
No,
or you,
no,
you,
no, no,
you
no.
charge incredible no. taxes on them?
No, just to some balanced approach.
Let's ride the shit out. We're going to have some other... It's already coming. We already have, like... You can't force the issue. Like, we already have, like Tesla, for instance, is making fantastic electric cars. Like, that's...
It's unbelievable.
Know, another
the penetration.
Generation.
He's another genius.
Exactly.
It's amazing the penetration.
Things will happen of their own accord. Don't worry about the Earth because of the heat, because of our fossil fuel. It's ridiculous. It's unbelievable, and it kills me because, like, I go around my neighborhood, right, and like, there's so few things you can really do as an individual, right? To sort of, well, I want to help global warming. It's so easy to state that shit and make a picture, but like,
right.
we're actually doing
and put
it in
up
real
a
life.
Poster board on Facebook.
Right, exactly. Like, share this if you want the Earth to survive. Like, oh,
well, how about doing something to make the Earth
right.
survive?
So I'm not saying I do so much, but listen, I do more than I would think 90% of the people do, based on the fact that I don't eat animal products. So there, the most methane comes from cows and livestock and things like that. So don't blame me for that. And I recycle nicely. I take my plastic bottles. I take my cardboard out. And I drive around my neighborhood and I see the way other people recycle, and my neighborhood is probably more prone to believing in global warming than not. Like, they recycle worth a shit. So I think people just feel good about themselves. It's like, aren't I a good person? I believe in global warming. And it's like, this goes back, it's like religion. It's like another religion. It's like, wait a second, aren't you the least bit skeptical? Like, think this through. They're sort of telling you that they know for a fact that the Earth is getting much warmer because we're using lots of cars. Like, okay, do we even know that the Earth is getting much warmer? Like, based on your life experience, if somebody told you, if nobody ever said anything about global warming, would you be, you know, the summers and the winters, it's much more extreme and much hotter than it was when I was a kid. I'd be like, no, it's summer and it's winter. It's really...
When I look back to the 70s, I felt like the winters had way more snowstorms.
Okay.
I felt like we had the foot after a foot after a foot all the time. Mm-hmm. So, if anything, I don't feel like it's more extreme. I feel like it's more...
Right, it's gotten better. And who's to say, that's the other thing, like, who's to say, like, well, maybe if the Earth does warm up by 2 degrees, maybe that's a good thing. Like we're all automatically like, wait a second, we're outside the scope of nature and we're fucking with nature. Like,
maybe that is nature.
Maybe that is nature, and it would be. Why are we sort of excluded from that? Because we, you know, how are we somehow outside of that box? Like,
but can't you accept that maybe it is the,
maybe it is, but to do social planning and politics and international agreements based on this theory is ridiculous, I think.
Yeah, I agree. You know, to some extent, I agree with you. You know, I think most people are full of shit. nobody's really doing anything about it.
Al Gore won't stop eating meat. Al Gore, the UN said like the number one cause of greenhouse gases is the methane caused by cows from farting, ironically. So,
it's kind of funny that at the end of the day is what we our main thing we have to get rid of.
And you can Google this shit. I'll put a link up on the ski store.
Farting cows.
So you would think Al Gore as the sort of like, you know, high priest spokesperson of global warming and what a threat and a danger it is, just for sort of like symbolic purposes.
Right.
Like
nothing else. Become
would be a
vegetarian
and say, listen, I'm doing... But he doesn't. So it's like, wait a second, dude. You can't stop eating meat, yet you're going to go around dictating like what everyone should do because the earth is on the verge of being destroyed, but you won't stop eating steak because of that? Fuck you.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I have no problem with that.
Right. Sorry, Al.
I think Al's fine.
All right.
Do you do 2 nights of Rosh Hashanah, or is it just...
Do 17 nights of Rosh Hashanah. No, I do.
I do it for the whole year. No, I do. It's one big celebration.
2 nights. It's good, the Jewish holidays, because you give you the two things, so it's like, okay, you do the husband's 1 night, the wife's the next. You know, you can sort of break the family thing out, which is always a negotiation process, too, in terms of like, well, we're doing the first night, then you got to get it going.
Oh, with me, with all the divorces, but it's more about the kids at that point.
Yeah, so what's your plan?
Just say, you know, my parents come up for all this stuff, which is nice, you know, and like, I listen.
See, that's what it is. Like, it's
I understand
like,
that, right. But I guess I just am like, it could be around something else. Let's just do it around the fact that the moon is that
the NFC wild card.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm fine with that. I don't really care. It doesn't need to be religion, though. It could just be, you know what?
But it does for other people, so it's like, all right,
that's why I absorb it and I go with it. I have no problem. I'm all about that. That's fine. I just don't buy into the premise upon the ceremony, which we don't do, so it's fine. So it's all good. So I believe we're going to be at my brother Mark, who will be a guest on Ski Slopes shortly. I believe we're going to be over at Mark's on Wednesday. I've got Burke on Thursday. I don't really know what kids are around. And, you know, that's what we're going to do. So I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be nice to get together with everybody.
Yes.
And I do look at it like that. I mean,
you don't go to temple, right?
Oh, I haven't been to temple since I graduated. Since I became
since
I became a bar mitzvah moat.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's whole process too. Going to Hebrew school on Tuesdays and Thursdays and Sundays,
because
like, God doesn't understand English, right?
If there is a God, I'm sure that's what He wants you to do: is spend your fucking Tuesday and Thursdays not playing outside. Life, liberty, and the pursuit.
The whole Hebrew...
Did they say life, liberty, and go to fucking Hebrew school for 2 days?
And learn another language because... And listen, if you want to learn the other language because it's a cool thing to do and you're into that, great. But to learn it because, like, no. Because when you get up there, you have to talk with... Like, that's taking the ritual a little too far.
Didn't you just go to a straight-out Reformed temple?
Back in the day, I was Reformed, yeah. I mean, I'm in a conservative temple now, but now I'm sort of agnostic, I guess, if anything, but... But again, I still feel this obligation as a Jew to sort of be a Jew and, you know, be open-minded about it and do, like, the UJA stuff and all that. So, you know, as a people...
I feel no attachment to that.
But don't you think as a Jew, like if you ever look at, like, the Nobel Prizes won by Jews as compared to the rest of the population, like, we are sort of a very, you know, unique people that have created a lot of
I don't doubt that. I think, you know, I think you could look at every single race and creed and find a wide range of that.
I don't know.
Oh, look at you.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, but...
Don't you think the Italians have created artists and artisans and thinkers?
But I think there have been
so many more Italians
than Jews. Like, if you look at Jews as a percentage of population on the planet, it's ridiculous the amount they've contributed in science.
Listen, there's no argument that Jews have been oppressed throughout the group called the Jewish people.
I'm not focusing on the oppression part, because that's clearly the case.
I understand, but I believe that yields all the accomplishments that
you think you don't think it's the contrary? You don't think it's the achievements that somehow makes the oppression occur?
I think that the oppression is... Well, I think it's mutual. I don't know where I don't believe there's a start to that. Like, I think it's continuum.
What is that? Why have Jews been persecuted throughout the ages? More so than, like any other people, yet achieve that? Is there some sort of...
Do you know what that means?
You talk to a Jew and they're like, well, it's jealousy. And it's like...
Jealousy?
No, it's not. Like, but what is it? Like, what... I'm curious to know what the actual dynamic would be and have an honest conversation in terms of...
I think if you just look at the path upon which the Jews traveled through the history of time, the circumstances led to the kind of evolution that bred and brought along a lot of, you know, I think that we weren't, oh, well, I but guess we were
like
slaves.
But it seems it's not a matter of like conquering us. It's a matter of eliminating us. Like, what other people has gone through time where other people try to eliminate them? Like, it's a strange thing. And it's, you know, fairly recent too. I mean, within the last, you know, 70, 80 years, where it's like, you know, it just occurred again. Like,
I'm trying to recount, you know, the movie Passover Time in my head right now. The Ten Commandments. Trying to recount that in my head to give a better explanation
of
it all.
Like, our generation in particular, like Cecil B. DeMille's The Ten Commandments, like, that is. Like that's the Bible.
Charlton
that's
Heston
the Torah. I know.
Is
and the
Judaism
Red Sea opening
in my
up,
mind.
And Edgar G. Robinson. Like,
right?
The guy who like, makes the golden calf.
Exactly. I don't know.
You know, Brenner is Pharaoh. You know what I mean, though? Like, as far as like, and I guess you could say, well, the Chinese and the Tibetans now, it's maybe simple, but just.
I just think that as a smaller group, there's the ability to move through history, through the world, and in a more concentrated way, without being, and the circumstances could, you know, an oppression being one of those circumstances could lead to the strengthening of the unit, and I suppose we were exposed to whatever happened early on in life that would advance intelligence on some level, and this just group
I think
of
culturally,
people, culturally
is
yeah,
that
like
is
I don't
emphasized.
I don't think it's, you know, I just think it's one path that one group was able to take, just like the singular path that you have been able to take or I've been able to take, influenced by these more community-based paths that are going on and sort of, you know, movements of energy also, like your individual one amongst it, and that's how I look at things.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. I still just feel that there's a bit of like this elimination thing. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe other
that because we've been people have been trying to eliminate us
eliminate
forever.
It's like not just sort of conquer us and, you know, like if you look back at the Spanish Inquisition, the Holocaust, the whole thing,
right.
Queen
time
Esther,
after
whatever
time.
That was,
right.
Time after time. It's not. Just, it's about just killing us.
And why do you think that everyone wanted to kill us?
I don't know. Like, I'd love to get to the bottom of that, because you asked Jews. And
no,
like,
I think because we were an advanced group. That's my point.
Okay.
Is that
okay.
We were able to. As a community,
so out of envy, out of like, we can't figure that shit out, so we may.
Well,
kill
you want
them.
To know the answers because yeah. We've been able. I think that the Jews over time have been able to, I suppose, execute capitalism better than a lot of other groups.
Right, to the point where they
yeah.
all look at it as like it's a conspiracy. Like, you guys have like some meetings going on. It's like, it's not that, you know.
No,
it's,
just for whatever reason, culturally.
Right.
Because we've been always maybe, you know, been oppressed, had to try and figure out how to make sure we got our fair share. And
so other people look at that.
Got good at that.
Yeah, but other people look at it as though it's like that, again, it's like the Jewish cabal, it's a conspiracy, like we're, you know.
Shysters.
Yeah, there's something going on behind the scenes amongst us all that, like, keep the Christians out and don't let them know, which.
Yeah, nothing.
I don't know anything about that.
And I think that's just my point, that we're the small group.
Mm-hmm. So it is. It's our achieving and then the envy or the questioning of, like, how come they're achieving like that. And that
leads
to persecution.
I think ultimately it's the whole we-they of religion.
I agree with you on that.
Okay, and then that starts. And then there's the mistrust amongst people who don't look like you, act like you.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the larger group taking advantage of the smaller group, weaker group maybe.
Mm-hmm.
The weaker group fighting back, learning how to deal with that, learning how to operate amongst it all. You know, I think that's just, it's just all the dynamics of all these kinds of things, and there's so many variables at play at any given time.
Well, it gets scary, because you think, like, listen, you know, history has shown that this is the cycle of it, you know, so you wonder, like, you know, obviously it's possible it could happen again, you know, but would it happen again? And,
you know, it wasn't that long ago.
No, that's
and, it, and not even only that, it's now. It's not just, we're talking about the Jews right now, but think about all the other groups. It's now. What do you think all these wars are about? What do you think's going on in the Middle East? it's about one group trying to hold down another group, and they're just it's don't you know
like Middle East, man. Like they can, when are they gonna get this shit together? Like it's just
never
between dictatorships.
Never in our lifetime.
Fundamental religion, not in our lifetime. And I used to think it was like within our lifetime, and now
when they were having like those summits and shit back
yeah,
at Camp
Jimmy,
David.
Camp David's yeah. got you know. I mean, think how great that was at the time. You know, he's got the Israeli prime minister and the Egyptian guy like shaking hands, and everything's cool. And like, all right, great. Within the next 25, 30 years, this will all be worked out.
You know what I think's gonna happen? I think something bigger than our world is going. I think there's going to be...
The aliens are going to attack us?
No, I don't think it's going to be the aliens attack us.
The Middle East comes together?
But I think that there's going to be something like that that unites the world. I don't mean in a battle against the outside world, but that simply lets us understand that we become common and we become one smaller group amongst something bigger. At some point, I feel like that's going
like
to
aliens,
occur.
Dude. I mean,
it was what I'm saying. I'm saying it's from something bigger than just the Earth, like across the universe. I don't mean aliens attacking us.
Right,
I don't
think we're gonna, like
it's not World War III with Tom Cruise or Will Smith. I'm talking about just some kind of identification of all of this.
Well, yeah, I mean,
that makes us come together in a commonality as Earth people.
Right. I think it was Reagan who said if we did discover that there were people on other planets,
we would be a lot fucking friendlier.
We'd be like, all right, I'm an Earthling. You know, like,
exactly.
A group. And it's ridiculous, like group identification stuff that goes into your psyche. It's like it is. It's an inbred thing. But like, it's a ridiculous how something like that would just widen it to that level. And we just don't do it voluntarily. You know, we just don't see it that
right.
way.
Why do we need to have some external factor
to push us
to that?
Belief systems that you don't believe. And nationalities where there's no real lines in the sand. You know,
Chuck D once said something along the lines of basically if everybody just fucked everybody else, there'd be no religions or races. You kind of have to sort of see that in a way. You know, I understand why it doesn't happen.
Right. I hate the word race. It just lends itself too much of a sort of biological distinction between people.
Right. But isn't it though? They're from air regions. It's regional race for the most part.
I don't think so.
Isn't it Occidental? And,
here's the problem. It's like use the word race. But then
Caucasoid and Negroid.
We say human race. We say the human race. So it's the human race. And then it's like, but you know, then we use black and white as racial terms. So they're not really racial. If the race itself
is
human. And I would distinguish something as like, if you can procreate, if you can have sex and a child can come from that act,
okay,
you are of the same race, I would think.
Well,
know?
That's Chuck D's point.
Okay, so there you go. So
we're all one race.
So just semantically, I would think it would be a better move for everybody if we eliminated the word race. If we just referred to people as black-skinned and white-skinned, I think it would be better
than if we used the word race.
Because I think racism is created in part by the use of the word race. It creates a separatist paradigm.
So you wouldn't? How would you define like Asians? They're from a different race than we are.
I would say they're Asian, but I don't think I would say it's an Asian race.
You just don't like the word race.
Yeah, Caucasian's fine. You know,
Caucasoid,
Negroid. I mean, if you really want to break it down, I mean,
Mongoloid
skinned,
is Asian, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know. Just race to me, and you don't think about it, but it just does create this sort of thing like you're a different race of people. Like, it's so different. It's, you know, if you're a different race,
it's creating a barrier.
It is. When basically it's skin color and hair. I mean, that's really
skin color and hair. I never thought of it.
I mean, what if redheaded people were considered a separate race? The gingers.
But wait, why do you say it's skin color? You think that's
because
all
that's
that defines race?
It's not all,
skin
but
color
those are the two
hair.
Most apparent things. And I'm sure there's other things in redheaded people that physical differences that exist. But
height.
You know, but for the most part, redheaded people, their skin's a little different because it's got
You're
more.
You're talking about redheads
freckles.
Right now?
I'm talking about redheads now. that using the term race, you could define redheads as a race because they have freckly skin, they have the
Yeah,
red
but you're
hair.
The one who came up with the hair as being the race definer.
But but what else is there? I mean, yes, there are other, as far as being apparent,
there's a whole slew
physical.
Of physical attributes that are relevant to people who were born in certain particular areas.
Yeah.
Chinese people's facial structure is different than
okay.
North
okay.
American people's facial structure.
Okay.
Just a variety All right. of things along those lines.
All right. But okay, but I still think the most apparent are your skin color and your hair. Like I think that's those are the two big ones. I think everything else, yeah. Bone structure of the face a little bit. The nose, sure.
Your eyes, I mean, is there occidental
but think about how minor that shit really is. I mean, not to come across as an after-school special, but it's such small
Why?
Bullshit.
What's other than afros on black people with hair, what else is hair different? Like, Chinese people might have black straight hair? Like, what's the difference?
Yeah, I'm thinking more of a black-white thing as opposed to an Asian thing. But yeah, I guess Asian guys or women, they don't have their hair doesn't vary all that much, right? They don't have blondes.
What else is there between Asian, white, and black? Latino, is that different?
I don't know.
Is that a different... That's some different race, is
it? I don't think so. I don't think about
it. Well, people say race and say Latino, or that's ethnicity, not race.
Yeah, I guess... Yeah, everything else is the same, right? And, you know, it's facial structure.
Well, I don't know.
Skin. Hair. If anyone else knows,
please post it on
drop us line ski
the ski on Facebook. On Facebook.
All right, we're gonna take a little pausation.
And we're back, Mwaduke here on Ski Slope, having a different kind of podcast, Moy. What are you thinking, bro?
You know, it's a little heavy. It's a little heavy. We're getting into some shit.
Okay, listen, share your feedback. We'd like to hear whether you think we're interesting. Are we boring you? I mean, I don't need to be interesting. Are you interested in the topics? Like, I don't want to be so presumptuous that our words are so interesting. But hopefully they are.
And I think the thing, like, once we have, like, Swago run and get all the memories down, and we're going to get back to that, too.
Yeah, no doubt.
But it would be great to have Swago people in with us talking shit like this, you know? Like, which is again, what the ski slope was. It wasn't like, you know, you sat on the ski slope and you talked about when you were an eagle or a junior. You talked about shit that was going on, and at least for me, it was... It was heavier topics than what I talked about at home.
It was relatively heavier talk than anything you were doing anywhere else.
Exactly. So that's, you know, that's the sort of what we're
so
trying
to... So we covered
to
a lot of interesting subjects this evening. So global warming. Well, the subjects are interesting. Whether
right,
or not our talk is interesting, you know, global warming, Syria, we're all over the board.
Judaism
for quite some time. So on this air of Rosh Hashanah,
5774.
Is that the number?
That is. You know, I figured it out. It's 40 years. It's like 7-4. It's 57. I got that. I always had that. Mm-hmm. But then 7-4, it's 40 years behind whatever year it is or coming up.
What did you just say?
So it's going to be so it's going to be 2014, right?
Okay.
So 40 years behind that is 74.
So that's what the... But it's in the 50s.
No.
It's 20... What year is it in the Jewish...
5774. So 74 is 40 years. Oh, but it's in the 50s.
57.
Yes. Well, 57 I always had. 57 was always there. It was the last two numbers.
I didn't even know.
You didn't even know 57?
No.
God damn.
That's how little I pay attention.
Get this
bet.
Boy in temple.
So it's 57-74.
Oh, the one cool thing I don't want to leave without saying is that I did find out about, like, the Torah and Judaism.
Okay.
This is interesting. Is that based on, I guess, the Hebrew calendar, where the earth starts at the year zero, Abraham is born in the year... 1948.
Okay.
And then Israel is created under our, you know, traditional Christian calendar in 1948.
Okay. No other response. Swell coincidence.
Yo. All right.
Nifty.
Still at mouse.
Ah, come on.
Listen, that was the one thing where I'm like, okay, that's a little something.
Here's how I look at stuff like that. I know you call it synchronicity a lot.
Yeah, we'll get into
like
that because we'll get to forget the religion stuff.
Here's my general answer to that. In this world, there are billions and trillions and some zillions of numbers, some type of gillions number that I can't even say, of things happening. And the fact that there's a lot of random ones that occur
simultaneously. I've had crazy shit happen, though. Like, on three occasions.
There's a lot of crazy scenarios that could happen.
We'll save it for our next podcast, but have you ever had a situation happen where it was mystical? Where it was like, oh my God, I can't believe this has happened. Like,
other than our canoe trip, no.
All right, well, on that note...
We're out, friends. We hope you enjoyed it.
All right.
Episode 6 of the Ski Slope.
Coming soon.